This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It means food, water, medicine, and other essential humanitarian assistance must be able to flow into Gaza and to the people who need them.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken issuing the U.S. administration's strongest urging to Israel so far to avoid harm to civilians. Details coming up also. Violence among the Eritrean diaspora has broken out in recent weeks. And the Sudan's conflict is in its seventh month. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Diplomatic efforts to avert a wider Middle East conflagration continues. U.S. President Joe Biden and Saudi Arabia Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman are discussing ways to stop the conflict between Hamas and Israel from widening. France's president is in Egypt to meet with President al-Sisi and has called for aid to reach Gaza. Today, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees has said it will be forced to stop its work in Hamas-administered Gaza unless it receives fuel by the end of Wednesday. A small number of aid trucks have entered Gaza since the weekend, but there are only a fraction of the usual flow of aid across the border. Gaza authorities say more than 7,000 people have died in the Israeli bombardment, which began after Hamas fighters attacked Israeli communities on October the 7th, killing at least 1,400 people and kidnapping more than 200. Reporter Linda Grantstein is closely monitoring the conflict, and she's standing by in Jerusalem to brief us on the matter. Welcome to African News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you very much.
So, Linda, let's start by talking about these shortages. Vital fuel supplies needed to run hospitals and provide water to Gaza are on the verge of running out. Gaza's two main sources for electricity have stopped functioning. Even lines for the few still operating bakeries in Gaza, according to local reports, stretched for more than 10 hours. What do you say?
Well, yes. I mean, Gaza is totally chaotic. And about six hospitals have already shut down. Israel, by the way, the Israeli army released photos of what it says are 500,000 liters of fuel that Hamas has and that is not giving to the civilians in Gaza. And so Israel says that it has put the blockade on Gaza because of the hostages. And if the hostages were released, then Israel will let all of the fuel and all of the humanitarian aid in. And they say the people of Gaza should go to Hamas. Now, I don't know if we have any way of confirming that. What we do know, I spoke today to a psychiatrist in Gaza, and he said the situation is growing increasingly desperate. You have hundreds of thousands of people who fled northern Gaza after Israel told them to, saying that it was going to bomb northern Gaza. And some people are sleeping in the streets and tent camps and have nowhere to go. And the Israeli bombardment is continuing throughout the Gaza Strip, although more focused on the north. There are also bombings on the south. So the situation before all of this started in Gaza was very, very difficult. And now Gaza does seem to be on the brink of a humanitarian crisis.
And talking about Israeli bombardments, the United Nations in the besieged territory said its shelters were overwhelmed by more than 600,000 Palestinians fleeing Israeli bombardments. And this after the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza at the Security Council, saying that clear violations of international law are ongoing. And then we mentioned it yesterday and you talked about it. Israel's ambassador to the UN demanded that Guterres resign over his comments.
Yes, in fact, there's quite a bit of tension between Israel and Guterres. Even moreover, he said something that the Hamas attacks did not happen in a vacuum, which Israel sees as kind of blaming Israel for what happened, and Israelis are furious and, in fact, announced today that they are not going to give visas to United Nations officials who want to come to Israel and have started actually denying one today until the Secretary General, takes back his comments or apologizes. Guterres has hit back saying, I also said that, you know, nothing can justify the Hamas attacks. So there's a lot of tension. I mean, Israel has long believed that the United Nations, you know, is not a friend of Israel. And so there's quite a bit of tension. At the same time, I think that Israel does understand that it has to find a way to get more humanitarian aid into Gaza. As you said in the intro, you know, there have been some trucks. I think something like 34 trucks have gotten in, but that's just a fraction of what Gaza needs. Gaza needs water, medicine, food. It's really and Hamas, which is supposed to be running Gaza, the Hamas leaders, you know, aren't there. They're all, you know, in bunkers or in tunnels underground. So there's a lot of, uncertainty in Gaza, a lot of tension, a lot of fear. And as you said, the death toll is continuing to climb.
And Linda, negotiations to release more Israeli hostages held by Hamas are still ongoing. Can we see a breakthrough soon?
Well, we thought we were going to have a breakthrough, yesterday and the day before that. The Israeli government made an interesting statement today in which it publicly thanked Qatar, which Israel does not have diplomatic relations with, for its role in trying to secure the freedom of the hostages. And there have been a lot of reports that Qatar has been pressuring Hamas to release at least the women and children. I mean, you have babies who have been kidnapped. I can't even, you know, think about what it's like. Some of them are with their parents. Some of them are by themselves. There was a 9-year-old boy who had his ninth birthday yesterday in Hamas captivity. And there were two elderly released hostages earlier this week. And in a news conference, one of them, an 85-year-old woman, said that she was beaten on her way into Gaza, but that once she actually was in one of these tunnels underground, she was treated well and given medical treatment. So that's given people some hope. On the other hand, it's known that at least some of the hostages, including one that I know personally, a young man named Hirsch Goldberg Polin, had his arm blown off from a grenade, a 23-year-old young man. He apparently made a tourniquet out of his shirt, but something like that obviously needs very extensive medical treatment. And his parents spoke at the UN yesterday, his mother, Rachel, and he's an American Israeli, and she said they have no idea whether or not he's still alive.
And lastly, Linda, intelligence officials told reporters that U.S. spy agencies believe the blast at a Gaza hospital that killed hundreds a week ago was caused by a Palestinian rocket that suffered engine failure and broke apart in two pieces. So they're saying Israel was not responsible for the explosion and the Palestinian militants were.
Yes, correct. I mean, you know, Israel said that almost right from the beginning. In fact, I think we talked about it on the show right when it happened, and Israel said it was investigating. But, you know, I think at least in a lot of the Arab world, they believe that it was Israel. And the reason, you know, that Hamas didn't say anything or continues to blame Israel is it was Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It wasn't a Hamas rocket. It was another radical group in Gaza. And apparently, Israel says at least that hundreds of rockets have fallen short, and then at least some of the deaths in Gaza are due to that, not only to the Israeli bombing.
Reporter Linda Grantstein, closely monitoring the situation in Israel. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
As an Israeli ground invasion on Gaza approaches, President Joe Biden is facing the challenges of balancing unwavering support for America's closest ally in the Middle East with international demands for more robust protections for civilians in Gaza and Israeli restraint to avoid a broader war in the Middle East. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kosuwara has this report.
As airstrikes in Gaza continue, President Joe Biden has been urging Israel to consider the consequences of what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu calls its mighty vengeance on Hamas.
Are you encouraging the Israelis to delay invasion? puppet in Israel.
It's part of Biden's push to buy more time to secure delivery of much-needed aid for civilians, the extraction of several hundred Palestinian Americans trapped in Gaza, and hostage negotiations. Four hostages, including two Americans, have been released from among the more than 200 people that Israeli officials say were abducted by Hamas during its coordinated attacks on Israeli soil on October 7th that killed at least 1,400 people.
The attacks by Hamas did not happen in a vacuum. The Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation.
Those remarks by United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres at the UN Security Council on Tuesday prompted criticism from Gilad Erdan, Israeli ambassador to the UN.
The UN is failing, and you, Mr. Secretary General, have lost all morality and impartiality.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, also at the Security Council on Tuesday, warned Tehran against widening the war as Israel braces for more attacks from Iran-backed groups such as Hezbollah in Lebanon that are likely to intensify once Israel begins its ground invasion. Blinken delivered a forceful defense of Israel's military actions, but issued the administration's strongest urging to Israel so far to avoid harm to civilians.
It means food, water, medicine, and other essential humanitarian assistance must be able to flow into Gaza and to the people who need them.
The White House clarifies the humanitarian pause that Blinken called for is not the same as a ceasefire, which National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says will only benefit Hamas right now.
This is war. It is combat. It is bloody. It is ugly. And it's going to be messy. And innocent civilians are going to be hurt going forward.
Since October 7, Israeli airstrikes have killed more than 5,000 people in Gaza, according to the Hamas-controlled Ministry of Health, and displaced more than a million people. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has reiterated his appeal for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire to facilitate the release of all hostages and ease the epic suffering of civilians in Gaza. While he has repeatedly and strongly condemned Hamas' terror attack and said nothing justifies it, he said yesterday that it is also important to recognize that the attack did not happen in a vacuum. Guterres told the Security Council meeting on the war, the Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation. Edmund Garib, professor of Middle East history at the American University in Washington, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi why the Security Council was unable to reach a resolution on at least a humanitarian ceasefire.
The Security Council is, to a certain extent, is paralyzed. It's very difficult for them to act unless there is at least some understanding or common stand between these powers. Therefore, what we are seeing now is this paralysis and the inability of the Security Council of the United Nations to do what is needed, which is bring an end to the fighting, bring an end to the suffering of people on all sides, especially what we are seeing in Gaza. One of the most densely populated areas in the world is under attack by a far superior force. Of course, the attacks on civilians that took place in Israel also one cannot justify or support, but you cannot support or justify also a far worse number of casualties and suffering among the population.
Crown Prince and Prime Minister of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, called for the establishment of a Palestinian state based on 1967 border, and he said the conditions must be created for the return of stability and the achievement of a lasting peace that will ensure a just solution to establish a Palestinian state in order to achieve security and prosperity for all. Is that still feasible?
I think the dangerous situation that exists on the ground is already basically alerting many countries to the dangers accompanying the inability to grant the Palestinians their rights on their own land and the right to establish their own state. Even here we've seen in the New York Times an article by Thomas Friedman. Basically, he was urging and beseeching the White House to return to the policy of the two-state solution, and that there should be a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza next to Israel, and that that is the best way to make sure that we don't see constant eruptions of violence, of fighting every few years, in addition to the daily incidents that take place. What was interesting also that we heard from Freeman in his article is that the U.S. government should pressure the Israeli government to pull out the settlers from the West Bank.
That was Edmond Garib, a professor of Middle East history at the American University in Washington, speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Chenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Violence among the Eritrean diaspora has broken out in Europe, the Middle East, and North America in recent weeks. Hundreds have been arrested in clashes between supporters and opponents of the Eritrean government. In this report from Stuttgart, Germany, reporter Henry Wilkins speaks with members of the Eritrean diaspora about what has triggered this new clashes.
A peaceful Thursday evening in Romerkastel, a square in a residential area of Stuttgart, Germany. A month earlier, in September, the scenes could not have been more different. Pro and anti-Eritrean government protesters clashed outside a building hosting a cultural festival organised by pro-Eritrean government activists. The festivals are often used as fundraising events for the highly repressive Eritrean regime, as well as to intimidate members of the Eritrean diaspora who have fled the country, according to the regime's critics. The government denies the allegations and says the events are cultural. One anti-government protester said pro-government members of the diaspora came out of the building hosting the event and began throwing insults at them. Jonas Gebrewet is an anti-Eritrean government protester. He says our people couldn't tolerate these insults and immediately fights began to break out. People were using pieces of wood and construction materials. Then the police started to use tear gas to stop the fighting and tried to separate us, he says, cutting us off and keeping them in the building. Another witness to the violence shows how construction materials were picked up and thrown. Violence at Eritrean cultural festivals has become a regular occurrence in recent weeks across the globe, with clashes in Canada, Israel, and the US too. Asked what the authorities are doing to stop the festivals, one diaspora member in Germany said,
I can't say that the government of Germany has done all it can do. The problem here was that the hall was private property, which the government had no control over. So they tried to carry out the festival here, but because of our demonstrations, they couldn't.
German government officials said in a written statement to VOA it's doing all it can to prevent clashes between elements of the Eritrean diaspora within the confines of the law. Some Western governments have been proactive in shutting down the festivals. In Britain, authorities have prevented Eritrean cultural festivals from taking place. Meanwhile, the UK Parliament has called for an investigation into allegations members of the Eritrean diaspora in the UK are being extorted by the Eritrean government. Eritrean embassies in Canada, the UK and Israel were contacted for comment but did not respond. Emmanuel Ayasu runs a TV station in London that broadcasts news into Eritrea via satellite. The country has no independent media and consistently appears in the lowest ranks of the World Press Freedom Index. He says young Eritreans are beginning to stand up to the government.
Even though they don't support the government, they were not coming out in person to demonstrate. But now, especially the young people, they are standing up.
Habte Hargo is an expert on Eritrea. He explained.
And the number of young individuals fleeing the country has increased substantially, I would say, over the last 6, maybe 7 years. And these are individuals who've been tortured and mistreated by the Eritrean government.
Human Rights Watch says more than 580,000 Eritreans have left the country as of 2021. Members of the Eritrea government have pledged to continue organising festivals in support of the government. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Stuttgart, Germany.
The The war between Sudan's military and a paramilitary group is in its seventh month, with a death toll estimated at 9,000, with another 5.6 million people forced to flee their homes, according to the United Nations. With most of the world's attention now on the Israeli-Hamas war, some analysts worry about the plight of the vulnerable in Sudan. Abdi Ismail Samatar is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He was also a member of the Pan-African Parliament. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that the African Union has not done enough to contain the conflict.
Yeah, you know, when I was in my last meeting at the Pan-African Parliament, the issue of the Sudan came up. And right there, it was clear to me, although the Pan-African Parliament is an advisory body rather than a legislative body, that it was clear that we just don't have the wherewithal, moral or otherwise, to be able to address this question. So what's taking place in particularly in Khartoum, but more broadly in the Sudan, are two people, just like the Somali warlords of the 1990s. And they are the ones who brought Mogadishu to its knees and destroyed the country and the possibility of that country recovering. If the African Union cannot see this coming and where it's going to go, then the African Union itself should be disbanded, because it's a talk shop rather than a shop that brings people together, have an agenda, protect our people, create peace where there's war, create prosperity where there's poverty. And I just think the African people deserve better than what we have in the form of African Union presently.
Sudanese have been suffering, depending on international aid groups to feed them and to give them medical care. But we've seen countries like Rwanda send aid to Gaza.
Whether we agree with the Paul Kagame or not in terms of democracy and all of that jazz, it's very clear that Rwanda has got its act together. Its kids, children are going to good schools. The economy seems to be working very well, and so on and so forth. So if they have the generosity of the spirit to see that they can provide food aid for sort of the people of Gaza, well, then I will say to that. That doesn't mean, therefore, Rwanda should not also take the leadership in addressing what's happening in the Sudan, and particularly in Khartoum and in Darfur. And I think that should become a model for the rest of Africans. The Ethiopian government should be doing that. The Egyptian government should be doing that next door to them. Algerians should be doing that. The Nigerians, the South Africans. I spoke in that Pan-African Parliament meeting in May, and I said we should be able, if each and every country was able to donate $15, $20 million. For many countries, $20 million is not a lot of money. We could do a great deal to secure Khartoum. And if we secure Khartoum, the rest of the Sudan will fall into place. But seems to me the quality of leadership in our continent at the level of the presidency or the premiership is not there to be able to address this. And therefore, we begin to complain and then beg.
There are some who have blamed the fighting in Sudan between the two generals on foreign interests. Do you buy that argument?
Whether we like it or not, foreign interests, they are going to get their licks in our continent, whether we like it or not, whether we want it or not. The question is not whether there's going to be an influence in there. I'm sure Israel is involved in that. Basically, with the U.S. government, it was able to convince the previous regime to sort of recognize Israel and have a sort of a diplomatic relations with it. So, yes, it was there. But the question is, we can blame all we want to others. The question is, this is our continent, this is our people. And therefore, can we stand up to be counted? I mean, if we were able to have a standing army of about 15 to 20,000, the whole continent should be able to support that. ECOWAS is able to do that some of the time. And then we send these to places where there are horrific humanitarian crises, such as Khartoum in the Sudan. We are unable to do that. So blaming others for getting involved in this, well, that's the nature of politics in the contemporary world. They will get their licks in there if we don't have ours.
That's Abdi Ismail Samatar, a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator at the Somali parliament, speaking with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Minneapolis, USA. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.